Well, thanks for tuning in for the rebroadcast of this morning's show, live from the Bonner County Fair. Well, it was this morning at 8 o'clock. Unfortunately, we missed, just due to a technical problem, we missed the first portion of the interview and the conversation about the fair, and caught up, we were catching up with Pam Duquette about an upcoming butterfly festival. And so this will begin kind of in the middle of that conversation, actually very, very near the beginning of it, when Pam is just giving out some details about, dates, times, and information about butterflies, which you may not have heard. Then stay tuned when Phil and Julie are talking to folks from, I believe it was the Idaho Department of Fish and Game about what is coming up as the seasons begin to change. And it's almost elk hunting season, and what else is coming up on the fish and game schedule. So there you go. Here comes the KRFY Morning Show, the first one that we've ever done live from the Bonner County Fairgrounds. And we'll be here live all week at the fairgrounds. So stay tuned every morning, and also at noon and 5 o'clock. One last thing I'll mention is tonight at 7 o'clock, we're live at the Hive with Hannah Meehan and Ezra Pitcher. I'll be talking, and Hannah and Ezra will be playing music, and it will be delightful. You'll hear it on these airwaves, and you can, if you want to have even more fun, come down and join us in person at 7 o'clock at the Hive for the Little Live Radio Hour. All right, on now to the morning show, and Phil and Julie in conversation with Pam Duquette.
Planting of milkweed. I would like to share, we have a lot of milkweed being planted all by volunteers in town. I know there's some in Dover, there's some at the Waterlife, in Sagal, the Waterlife fishing game place. There's some at Pine Street Woods. As far as the city, I have a great volunteer, Bill Amit, I would love to thank. He has planted, with help from our Julie helped once, to plant down at the trailhead of Mikinik Hike at Baldfoot.
Yes, both property. Those places.
And I have put some in the wall at City Hall in the garden there. So the idea is to propagate milkweed to draw the butterflies to us. They depend on it. And I learned a fascinating thing, that they eat the leaves because it makes them toxic to predators.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
And so, a lot of bees, they really draw a lot of bees as well. They're not just a butterfly pollinator.
Right. So during the course of the 4 hours, what will be happening? What kind of educational events are going on?
It is, we are having about 15 or 16 environmental conservation nonprofit organizations. Okay. Scotchman Peaks is one, just because Phil has been associated with that. We are going to have educational hands-on activities at the different booths, focusing on the importance of our pollinators. We'll have a raffle basket, kids ambassador program, where they each get to win a prize.
So who are some of the other folks on display?
On display, we have the ICL, Idaho Conservation League, Cedar Mountain Perennial. The library is helping us. By the way, there is a great display in the library, one of the glass cases that Perky and I put together. The Mighty Monarchs. Let me see, Idaho Fish and Game. We have somebody from PBS coming. We're really excited about that.
That's the public broadcast system.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. I hate to miss, I know I'll miss somebody. Trout Unlimited, the University of Idaho.
Master Naturalist.
Yep, Master Naturalist. I said Scotch, Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society.
Well, it sounds like quite the... Now, will there be monarchs for people to see? Can you predict that, or is that...
Hopefully. That is the plan. They're bringing the flight house, like Julie mentioned. And this year, they have a program where they monitor the... Wings Rising does this. They monitor the butterflies because we're trying to find out why... So there's Eastern monarchs, Western monarchs. Mm-hmm. Ours go through the Northwest mm-hmm. and end up in Southern California or Northern Mexico. And they're the ones that we're worried mm-hmm. about right now. Because
I understood they had a devastating winter in California this year.
I'm sure for them, yeah. So their population has declined. We're trying to find out why. And so there's this program Wings Rising is doing where they put these little transmitters, I don't know how, on the butterflies.
Very carefully.
And very carefully.
Tiny tweezers.
And then there's an app you can put on your phone to follow the butterflies. And one of the programs that's kind of fun that Julie participated with me, we have 10 local women who decided to adopt one of these butterflies. So that's coming, and her name is Perseverance, Percy for short.
Mm-hmm. And the woman that, or the butterfly?
The butterfly.
The women, I can't mention all their names because I wouldn't remember, and I'd miss somebody.
That's okay. 10 of the best women
in town.
10
of the best women in town. You're right. And then Perky donated for one for her family also, so we'll have two that we know of.
Then we'll be able to track them.
Yes.
So where's the final destination for the monarchs? They pass through here.
Yes. The western final is Southern California and Northern Mexico. The eastern go to Mexico.
Northern terminus.
Yes.
How far north do they go?
Of the East Canada. They're amazing. Yeah. They fly like 1,800 miles. Yeah. And they have a short lifespan, except for the ones that go to Mexico on the eastern side.
Yes, the migration.
Yes.
They're longer.
They do generational.
Right.
You know, on their way, they reproduce more that somehow instinctually...
I know. It's a fascinating lifespan they have.
They are pretty amazing.
So folks come and they enjoy coffee and beverages
coffee,
and other things.
Beverages, food.
Is it free open to the public by donation?
Free to the public, donations would be great. Any proceeds we do make off of any sales, we are going to build a pollinator garden at Matchwood in the future. That's our plan. So mm-hmm. if there is any money made, it will go to that.
Okay.
And it's all donation.
And it's just an informational party. It's just to learn about the monarchs and their importance to us and our life.
And to celebrate, mm-hmm. you know, the groups that are promoting that. And there'll be milkweed to give away.
Ooh.
In fact, I've had lots mm-hmm. of people at the city, employees, ask me for milkweed, and I've been passing it out. So it's great to...
The milkweed lady.
Yeah, it's great to have. I brought some to the council one night, seeds.
The city, you mentioned before the program, the city has become a monarch town?
A monarch butterfly USA city.
Now, what does that mean?
It means that we want to promote and protect mm-hmm. the migration of the monarch butterflies. And
are there things the city needs to do to qualify for that designation?
This is one of the things. We have a festival, mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. celebration of that. We also have signs. We have one at the City Hall. There's one at the Chamber of Commerce. There's one in the Pollinator Garden at the Russell Center, Traverse Park. And so that's what we do. That's basically all you have to do is just commit to mm-hmm. promote and plant milkweed.
Well, that's exciting news.
It is exciting. Let me see. I'm probably forgetting something.
Sounds like a fun day. So tell us the date and the time again.
Thank
so we
you.
Can everybody can get it on their calendar.
It is Saturday, August 29th from 12 to 4 at Matchwood. Oh, and I forgot we have music by Harold Zygier.
All right.
Have much more fun than that. And like I said, the different groups that are going to be there, they all have an activity, a hands-on mm-hmm. activity for kids. And we're doing a scavenger hunt, so there's going to be clues at each of the booths, the conservation group booths. They've contributed a clue, and then kids will have to go around and
find
it.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Good.
So open for all ages.
Yes, please, all ages. Yeah. And Matchwood is that kind of place where kids are always welcome. And please come. Mm-hmm. Yes, bring your families. You know, just enjoy a day of community celebration of pollinators.
That's right.
Yeah. And people.
That's right.
Pollinators and people. And celebrate the newfound designation for Sandpoint.
The city of Sandpoint. Right.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is the KRFY Morning Show, broadcasting this morning live from the Bonner County Fairgrounds and all week from the fairgrounds.
Yes, all week.
You might hear the occasional pig squeal in the background. Right now, I think you hear some announcers. They are looking at scaling, judging rabbits. How do you
judge rabbits?
A rabbit, Julie?
I think it's what their body form and their weight and their fur and their eyes. That's all I know.
fluffy bunnies, right?
They look adorable.
There's different breeds too, so
yes, they're all competing.
A lot to learn.
We are wrapping up a first interview with Pam Duquette, who's talking about the Monarch and Friends Festival. In a moment or two, we're going to take a short music break and come back with a second guest, T.J. Ross from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you
You're
very much.
Somewhere, but
yes,
that's
he's
okay. Good.
He's in the area.
Good, good.
Thanks
for letting me share. Pam, one more time before we go out,
give
us the details.
The details. A Monarch and Friends Festival to celebrate the city of Sandpoint becoming a Monarch Butterfly City, USA, along with Dover and Rathdrum. There's many other cities and many other states across our country. August 29th, 12 to 4 p.m., music, spirits, drinks, ice cream, all focused on pollinators and the environment. And being a conservationist, this is just right up my league. So I'm excited to be a part of this. And I want to thank again Perky. She has done a lot of the legwork. It is quite an organizational feat. So in the Mighty Monarchs Conservation Group and the Cal Grant that we got to help do any of the purchasing for the activities.
And the city for caring enough to become designated as
a
monarch.
That's right.
City.
Excellent. Well,
thank
August,
you very much.
August 29th.
Right. I hope to see you there.
Yes.
Everybody. I know you'll be there, lady.
Thank you, Pam. Let's see if we
enjoy
can get things
your day.
To work here. We're going to take a short break with the flight of the bumblebee. Flight of the Bumblebee by Harry James.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That was all trumpet, wasn't it?
If that doesn't wake you up, then I don't know quite what will. We're back live from the Bonner County Fairgrounds with the morning show this morning, August 18th. And I'm your host, Phil Huff, with Julie Prochinski. And with us now is T.J. Ross from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Welcome, T.J.
Thank you. Happy to be here as always.
Yeah, it's great to see you out at the fairgrounds. Usually we're inside a studio, and it seems everything we talk about is out of doors. So this just has a much more natural feel to it.
I couldn't agree more. It's nice to not be in a studio and be enjoying the weather.
Now, T.J., you're the Regional Communications Manager is the official title, but I think of you as the clearinghouse for all information for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Is that an accurate description?
That feels pretty lofty.
Well,
but yes,
it's a pretty lofty role.
Yeah, I feel like in my role, I I'm charged with kind of knowing all things about fish and game and being able to speak to any of it. So I do my best.
Well, that gives us a wide palette this morning to talk about. We did come with a few specific topics, and we'll run through those, but it's an open invitation to bring up anything that's new and emergent. And before we get to some of the things on it, I do have to say I keep seeing, or maybe I'm recycling the same thing, record fishes this year all over the place on the Panhandle. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there have been quite a few, actually, and we've got records for fish that people, you know, catch and they harvest. And then we've also got a separate category for catch and release, and that's fairly new. And so those are a lot of the records that you're seeing are the catch and release records, because some of them have, there are species that have no records, and so yeah. It doesn't take much of a fish to get there. But I think in general, in the Panhandle, anybody that fishes up here probably knows that we grow fish really well up here relative to the rest of the state.
It's not unusual to occasionally see one of those each season. It seems like, and maybe I'm just paying more attention, that there's a larger number this year. Is there any particular reason? Is there an upwelling of nutrients or more people out there or new records to be had? Is there a theme, or is it just an unusually great year for fishing?
I think it's, I mean, there is no rhyme or reason to it. I think it is the catch and release category that people are just starting to clue into. And so
To keep track, really, right?
Like we hadn't kept track of it before, and now we are. Yeah. And so people are figuring it out, and it's a way for them to get their name in the record books
they're out there trying.
Any fish, yeah.
Well, let's bring it from fish to the fairgrounds. And the fairgrounds and the Idaho Department of Fish and Game have a long history together. I think we're sitting right behind a building here that houses some of the department's displays. So tell us a little bit about the association with the fair.
Yeah, so we love the fair. We love interacting with the public. Sometimes those conversations are easy, sometimes they're not, but we welcome it all. And I think our presence at the fair, that's what we look for every year. We wanna interact with the people that we're trying to serve. And hear their hunting stories, their fishing stories, things that they're happy with, frustrated with. And so we just love being with people at the fair. And so we've been at the Bonner County Fair for decades, Kootenai County Fair, Boundary County Fair. We participate in any of them that we can. We aren't at the Bonner County Fair this year. Actually, our officer that typically mans the fair here, he was playing flag football and had,
oh
yeah, that's all I have to say.
Oh,
right,
no.
He was playing flag football.
Oh
yeah.
No.
And
yeah.
Pretty severe knee injury.
Oh,
and
boy.
So we're running low this year on staffing the fair, but we will be at the Kootenai County Fairgrounds running our 3D archery range. So that's where most of our presence will be, but we regret that we can't be here this year.
It's always a shame they have it at we have it at the same time, the Kootenai fair and our fair.
What is a 3D archery range?
Yeah, so we developed this a couple of years ago. It has 3D targets.
Okay.
And it's for kids to come in and shoot for free. Obviously, we care about getting kids into shooting sports and hunting and fishing. And so this is kind of a good opportunity for kids to come through the door, fling a few arrows. And I think the target that they like the most is it's a 4-foot velociraptor. I don't think you'll find any of those running in the woods of Idaho, but kids love shooting that thing. So
well, it's good training, just in case.
It's good training, and it keeps it fun, just in case, right?
You never know when that Godzilla earthquake's going to wake up and suddenly everything's going to fly out of the ground.
Yep, they seem to really enjoy it. We had, on average, we have around 2,000 to 3,000 kids that come through and fling arrows. So it's a big lift on our part to get staff to manage it, but man, it's fun. It's cool to see the kids do it.
Well, that sounds exciting. You're going to have to bring that to the Bonner County Fair.
Absolutely.
Next year.
I know, right? I think it would be popular.
Yeah, that's something to see.
Yep.
Well, it's August, and already I went out looking for huckleberries, and it seems like they've played out, dried up, and won't ask you to divulge your favorite spots. But the leaves are already turning red, which is a harbinger of fall. And when we think about fall, it's bear season right around the corner.
Yes, we've got quite a few seasons that are, some of which have already started and many of which are about to kick off. So some of the early elk seasons have already kicked in for some of our controlled tag hunters. Mm-hmm. But many archery elk hunters are chomping at the bit because August 30th is
August
not very
30th.
Far away. And
August
that is
30th.
That's a big day for North Idaho. People are ready to get in the woods and put meat back in the freezer. And if they're anything like me, I'm starting to run low on meat. I'm ready to put meat back in the freezer, so I think people are feeling that.
Tell us about the staggering of the seasons. What opens when and how long do they last?
Yeah, so archery elk opens on August 30th, and then the any weapon season opens on October 10th. So that would be what most people call the gun season for elk. And so you've got your A tag, which is the archery tag. The B tag is the gun tag. And so really August 30th is kind of the launch for all of it, where people start really getting ready to hit the woods. And so, and then laced within there also, we've got different controlled hunt tags where people can start hunting at different times. And then we've got deer season, that coincides with those dates as well. So we're at that point where it's about to begin.
And the deer and the elk are, no pun intended, the big game.
Oh, yeah.
But the moose tags are highly coveted. I think that's a once in a lifetime.
It is. Once in a lifetime, you've got to draw. It's a lottery system, so we don't have preference points or bonus points in Idaho per what the public has said. They don't want those. And so you could put in your first time and draw the tag, or you could put in for 40 years and never draw the tag.
Is that open for residents only? How do we handle non-residents with that? Is it also a lifetime?
Yep, so it is lifetime for them as well, and they non-residents can apply. More of the tags go to residents, so there are caps on the number of tags for all big game species that non-residents can claim.
And it seems like in August and past years, I've seen people out scoping for mountain goats.
Yeah, probably so. You know, I'm not real familiar. I've never hunted mountain goats. I've never put in for them, mostly because the draw odds are pretty tough.
Very limited.
But, you know, when people get a goat tag, that's like what they do for the season. They put a lot of time in scouting, making sure they know where the goats are, and they don't want to miss their opportunity. It's the same with moose or bighorn sheep, those once-in-a-lifetime species.
Yeah. And, you know, wolves, longer season.
Longer season for sure, year-round for hunting, and used to be year-round for trapping. That's changed a bit with a federal injunction on trapping due to grizzly bear concerns that we had no control over. But yeah, it's basically open season for wolves.
Let's bring it back to bears. When's the bear season?
Bear season, I believe August 30th. I don't have it in front of me, but it's either August 30th or mid-September. I'm not sure. And that kind of depends on which unit you're hunting as well. But it's right here as well, getting on those huckleberry bears.
And right now, at least, that's for black bears only.
Correct.
Although we've been in the news this summer, we've been reading about the deregulation, delisting of the grizzly bears. Has that happened yet? And if so, will there be a hunting season for the grizzlies?
So hasn't happened yet. If you recall, 5 or 6 years ago, grizzly bears were delisted, and there were a certain number of tags that were allotted to Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. And the day before that hunting season began, there was a lawsuit that was filed, and so all of that was revoked, and they remained listed. We are hopeful that delisting occurs. The point of the Endangered Species Act is to get these populations to a level to where the states can then manage them, and we've demonstrated that with wolves. And we're hopeful. We believe that we're there for grizzly bears, and we're hoping that we get to that point. We are constantly working for that. I hear a lot of online rhetoric that we want to keep them listed. We do not. I want to be super clear about that. We do not. We don't want them to disappear. They deserve a place on the landscape, but we believe that they're at a point to where the states can manage them.
Well, that's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
And there are different populations. As with all of the animals we've mentioned, there are different populations, and rules and regulations apply by region. So just to go out on a limb, the delisting of the grizzlies may lead at some point to a controlled hunt in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem where there's a greater abundance. And it may lag in time for the permits to harvest one in North Idaho.
Correct. And I think that remains to be determined, but I think that logic is probably pretty sound, because the Cabinet Yak ecosystem, grizzly bears, they're much less abundant than greater Yellowstone ecosystem.
So bears are something that captivate the imagination, and beyond hunting, people do enjoy them for photography, just for the thrill of the experience, but they do present at least the conceived threat of safety concerns that a lot of other animals do or don't, and maybe they should. I'd actually suggest there's greater reason to fear a moose.
Yeah, I would agree.
For some reason, that doesn't capture the imagination.
Yep.
And so we should talk about safety of all wildlife, but particularly bear safety.
Yeah, for sure, and it's something we harp on all the time. We're big on education when it comes to being bear aware and being safe, and so think about it in a couple of different categories. So living with bears, you know, around your property and things that you can do to put attractants away. So putting garbage away, you know, barbecue grills, not leaving anything out that would attract a bear. If you have
bird feeders
for sure. If you have livestock, using electric fencing to keep particularly grizzly bears away from livestock. Electric fencing is really, really effective with grizzly bears. And we have programs to help with that. And so we're constantly working in Bonner County, Boundary County to try to equip folks with what they need to protect their property, essentially. So that's one bucket. Another would be camping or hunting or recreating in bear country. And so striving to never surprise a bear, right? You want to be loud when you're in the woods, preferably not alone, carrying bear spray where it's easily accessible. It does you no good if it's buried in your backpack and you come face to face with a grizzly bear. You need to be able to get to it quick. If you're camping, hanging your food, things of that nature that a lot of people are familiar with, but we do have a lot of new people, as you all know, new people moving to North Idaho that maybe haven't spent a lot of time around bears, and we try to remind folks all the time.
Yeah, I think one of the under-recognized potential threats are dogs off leash.
Oh, absolutely. 100%, because you know what a dog does.
Yeah.
It riles things up, and then when it gets scared, who does it come running back to?
Right.
You. And when it runs past you, you're now the slowest thing.
Yeah, go chase the bear and bring it back.
Yeah, and they'll leave you in the dust, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
So, you know, safety around bears is really important, especially that making noise. I remember growing up being taught that, you know, the bear bells do some good, but singing,
if you're
hiking solo or hiking a lot of groups where there's a lot of chatter, it creates that sound that alerts the bear to your presence.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, when you think of, so I often recommend to folks, like, bells are a great idea when you're walking in a group, just occasionally yelling, "Hey, bear," or anything just to be loud to make your presence known, because, you know, attacks usually happen when a bear is surprised. But I will also say this is why archery elk season, for me, in my role with Fish and Game, worries me, right? Because you're not doing those things. You want to be stealthy.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You're sneaking through the woods. You're calling like an elk, which grizzly bears can and do eat elk. So it's just a kind of a combination of things that are risky. And I'm not saying that hunters should do otherwise, but you just need to... They need to know where they're hunting. There's bears
super
in the area.
Hyper aware of their surroundings. Yeah.
Yep. And watch for sign.
Watch for sign, for
sure. That's the big one.
Yep.
You can tell when a bear's around.
Yep.
Hunting season itself presents opportunities to exercise good caution for non-hunters, you know, wearing bright colors, hunter orange when you're hiking. And tell us a little more about being prepared for fall activities in the woods.
Yeah, so I take my dog out all the time for hikes during hunting season, and I'm not hunting. And because I work for Fish and Game and I'm familiar with the hunting culture of North Idaho, like when it's during season, I wear blaze orange. I put a blaze orange vest on my dog. If there's somebody parked at a trailhead that I want to go on and I think they might be hunting, maybe I'll pick a different trailhead, or I just go in with a different level of awareness. And so I think folks that are recreating in areas where people might be hunting can be aware of those things, that it is hunting season. There's going to be people in the woods, and there are precautions that could be taken. The most important of which is the blaze orange piece, just making sure you're visible.
Yeah. And overlapping with hunting season is trapping season.
Yep.
Tell us about the seasons, and then again, precautions that hikers, especially those with dogs, should take during trapping season.
Yeah. So, trapping culture in Idaho is very strong, and I'm super thankful for that. There's a lot of states where that is no longer a right that people are able to exercise, and we fight really hard to maintain that, and we have a very strong tradition of trapping in Idaho, and it plays a really important role. Does introduce potential challenges with particularly hikers that are running dogs, and I think about this whenever I'm out running my dog, and we have videos online that people can watch for how to release a dog from a trap. Hopefully it never happens, but it has happened before. Those traps are oftentimes not meant to kill the animal. It's a foothold trap. So the foot gets caught in the trap. You can release that. We have videos that show how to do that. Folks can call our office and we can walk them through that. I would suggest learning that proactively. If a dog finds itself in a trap, it's stressful, right? You want to know what to do in the moment.
Is there a way to find out where people are trapping? I mean, what areas are they given an area to trap, or can they just trap any general stream? Or
that's a great question. So there No, there's not a way to find out. We don't even know.
Okay.
We have officers that are out patrolling, and if somebody's running a trap line, like we may know it's there through our patrols, but it's not like they have to publish it anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so you're probably not going to know, probably not going to see. We do have restrictions on how close traps can be placed to like a trail. I believe it's 200 yards. Mm. But dogs roam off trail, and mm-hmm. so
it used to be mm-hmm. much closer. And that's
and I may be off on that. I don't have it in front of me, but there are restrictions on that, and so but it could still happen. And
sure,
so that's why I say
sure.
just you know I carry cable clippers. Like when I bird hunt with my dog, I know I'm in areas where traps are. There could be a snare. And so I carry cable clippers so that if I find myself in that situation, I can deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's pause here. We're going to take a short music break and come back, and we'll talk a little bit more with TJ Ross about all things Idaho Fish and Game. We're broadcasting this morning live from the county fair. If you hear the occasional tractor in the background or the tamping of soil, no, Julie is not burying bodies behind us. I believe they're just reinstalling some irrigation systems for the lawn. But
that's it. And the rabbit judging is still going on, so you still have time to get down here and see what's going on.
There's activity already here, even on Tuesday morning. Well, right now we're going to listen to a little bit of County Line, the Sugarland version.
There's a place I like to go. Cherry bombs and cherry wine. Just past the Texaco, down on the county line. Beer cans and cemeteries. Spanish moss on the welcome sign. Catch a buzz.
Wow. Now you're awake.
That's right. Down on the county line.
Sugarland. Well, we have an update on fair activities. The rabbit judging continues on. I guess swine and pig judging is about to commence.
Swine and poultry.
Poultry.
Yes,
both.
At 9 o'clock.
Swine and pig, I guess, would be redundant. So.
Just a bit.
Yeah. And the blue ribbons for many of the other displays have already been awarded. They're inside. Jack says there's some especially nice-looking cakes this year. I suspect there's some left. I don't think he's bought them all.
No, I don't think so. And they didn't ask us to judge, so what the heck?
They knew better. We're live at the County Fair with the KRFY Morning Show here at 88.5 FM. I'm Phil Huff, your host, and Julie Perchinsky, my co-host this morning with TJ Ross from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. We are talking about all things fish and game. We were just leaving the fall hunting season. And before we do, during the break, TJ, you mentioned this is a season setting year. Tell us about what that means.
Yeah, so this is a big game season setting year. So we do it every 2 years. Nothing is happening yet, but will this fall and winter. And so I think it's important to bring this up because this is an opportunity for the public to tell us what they're looking for when it comes to big game hunting in North Idaho. I don't want to say that like everything under the sun is doable because sometimes it's not, but we always try to take into consideration what the public wants to see and weigh that with what can these populations handle. And we can tweak some things, not all things, but public input is a major, major part of this.
So this is when you'll evaluate the opening and closing dates. Do you evaluate harvest levels as well, or is that a separate ongoing process?
Nope, so that's all part of it. So it could be the dates for when the seasons run. For some of our quota-based tags, it could be the number of tags. So for moose, for example, it could be the number of number of moose tags that are available. And so what we do on our end is we're constantly gathering information, right? Like to understand how these populations are doing, where they're doing well, where they're not doing well. And we have all of that information and we develop what we call proposals for here's how we think based on the information we have, here's how we think we should tweak things. What do you think? And that's what we bring to the public and say, what do you think? Do you have thoughts on this? Good idea, bad idea, and we tweak things accordingly. Mm-hmm. But I do, like I said, I think it's important that I mention, like, we can't do everything.
Right.
People want a lot of things. We hear from everybody on all ends of the spectrum, and we have to kind of walk that knife edge and make sure we don't fall too far off one end or the other.
How often is there this process?
Every 2 years. And it's a big lift because we travel all over the five northern counties and have public meetings. We have meetings at the office. We put out videos. But we do all that because we genuinely care and we want
to
hear what the public wants.
Considered.
Yeah.
Do you look at the number of hunters and how many hunters there are? And has that been increasing or decreasing? Or what's that as far as averages?
Yeah, so we do look at all of that. And interestingly, the number of non-resident tags have been static through time. And I would have anticipated that the number of resident hunters would increase, right? Because population is increasing in Idaho. But interestingly, it's staying pretty level and pretty consistent. So not much has changed on that front, much to my surprise.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm. Yeah, we hear about the general decline in hunting, but then there's an increase in population levels. So that probably is the offset.
Yeah, I think so. And some people, you know, they roll off and they no longer hunt. New hunters recruit. I think we hear a lot about people feeling like overcrowding is a thing. They go to their spots and there's more people there. And I think that is a thing. And I think there's a lot of factors at play, one of which is technology, right? People have can open their maps now and see right where the private property is, public property. They have things in the palm of their hand that they used to not have and can do a lot more scouting digitally than they ever used to be able to.
Right.
And so people can hone in on these spots.
A lot of apps.
Yep.
Fires are almost always a topic in the last few years, but you know, particularly with the smoke haze we've had in the last month, it's present on everyone's mind. And while there seems to be an abundance of fires in the West, here locally we get the smoke impact, but on the ground there haven't been so many. How is this affecting the season, and how does this affect the year setting process?
Yeah, so up here, like you said, we've got some fires burning, but most of the smoke we're experiencing is coming from elsewhere. Down in the Boise area, there's some major fires that are burning that we're having to alert hunters that, hey, you have a tag for this unit, be aware that there are fires in the area. And so I think for anybody that's heading out into the woods here pretty soon, just make sure to do your research. Know where the fires are burning, and that may impact your hunting experience. Obviously respect and honor closures that are in place if there are any. And I think the other thing that I'll mention is, it's easy to look at a fire and it is destructive. It's burning something that you value, which is this beautiful forest, right? Or this landscape that you value. And I don't want to diminish that because that is true. And I feel that, and we all do. But I'll also say from a wildlife perspective, there are benefits, major benefits to fires.
Regeneration of the brush.
Absolutely. Like elk and deer, they feed on browse young plants that are growing in, and that's what fires create.
Natural process.
What really, I'm going to go out on a limb and suspect that what really might be impacting this year's season-setting year is how dry it's been. The landscape is super dry. Although we had a seemingly wet winter, we did not have abundant snowfall. The soil moisture is gone.
Yep.
The huckleberry bushes are all shriveled up. It seems like the browse that would be there for ungulates is diminished. The huckleberry production for bears is diminished. Populations might struggle with both winter survival success rates, reproduction rates. I'm assuming that all factors into the setting season setting process.
It does. And I think that will remain to be seen on a lot of that, right? Like we have big weather events like this that happen, harsh winter, dry summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a year or two for us to kind of see how that played out at a population level. So we will be paying attention to that. Obviously, the weather this year has had implications for fish and water availability. Like this is a total anomaly. And we don't know, know exactly how that's going to play out.
Right.
I will say one thing we have noticed across the state is on the bear front, bears have been moving down into the valleys
I heard that a bit more often.
Sure.
We've had
quite in Colorado, they've had problems
I've been hearing. I think it's west-wide.
It's a dry,
like it's a,
dry year throughout the West.
Yes.
When they can't find the food up in the mountains, they head into the valleys. And we've had more grizzly bears in the valley this year than we have in quite a few years, probably because of that.
Now, we have on our list to talk about the Large Tracks program, and I suspect that fits into all of this.
It does, yeah. So for folks that aren't familiar with the Large Tracks program, this is a cooperative agreement that Fish and Game has established with big timber companies. So think of like Potlatch or Manulife, North Idaho Timber Group, these big corporate timberland owners. Somewhere to the tune of 1 million acres in the panhandle.
Mm.
It's private land. I think that is the important caveat here. Those are private lands, but we have an agreement worked out with them where in order for the public to maintain access to those, Fish and Game pays a certain amount per acre for the public to access those lands. I think historically a lot of people have looked at those lands as public lands and probably accessed them as public lands, either not knowing or not recognizing that they were on private land and trespassing. And there historically has been a lot of challenges that those companies have dealt with damage to roads, to trees, which that's a crop for them that they're trying to harvest and make money on. And so this agreement allows the public to access it. It also gives, per legislative action, gives us the mandate to enforce some of those access rules that those landowners have. And so just that reminder, those lands are available for the public to use. There are rules about how those lands can be used, where you can drive ATVs and cars, and please pay attention to them.
So is this a new program or has it been around?
I think it started
in
2019.
Okay.
And so
it's fairly new.
It's fairly new, and it stemmed out of the companies reaching out to us because they were considering other options with those lands. As far as like not making it
closing
available
them.
To the public.
Right.
And I will give an example. There are some particular parcels that those companies have really struggled to get public compliance on. They've pulled them from the program and then they are now essentially auctioning them off to the highest bidder for exclusive access rights.
Oh, wow.
So that becomes the rich man's sport at that point.
Yeah,
and
then it becomes,
we want to avoid that.
When it becomes pay for play, the average public is no longer allowed access.
They lose. Yeah. They lose. And so that was a tangible example. Their reason when we asked them was the amount of money we are spending on putting gates back in that are ripped out or cut down, trees that are destroyed, like we just can't do it anymore.
So respect private property rights. Respect the public land, too.
Yep.
We really shouldn't be encouraging destruction on any of these lands.
Absolutely. It's for all of us to enjoy.
Are there any limits on campfires and camping on those lands, or what are the rules?
They are. So they definitely have travel restrictions, so places where you can and can't drive. If there's a gate,
don't tear it down.
Don't go around it, because we can and will write tickets for that so that it stays publicly accessible. And they do have rules on camping, on fires. All of that can be found on our website. We've got those rules printed out super clearly for each of the different entities that own and that are a part of that cooperative program.
Well, let's see. We want to make sure we talk about the upcoming North Idaho Bear Fair.
Absolutely.
We're not far away.
No, September 26th from 12 to 3, Boundary County Fairgrounds. It is a lot of fun. We started doing this 4 or 5 years ago, and it has been very, very successful. I will say one of my favorite things at this bear fair is our remote-controlled grizzly bear. So we have a grizzly bear mounted on top of this remote-controlled car, essentially.
Yeah. That's a wild
charges
thing when it's
at
working.
You at this a little bit slower than a grizzly actually does, and so we use this to help folks understand how quickly a bear can be on you. It starts 30 to 40 yards away, and within seconds, it's on you. And so we have folks back facing away, hand already on their bear spray. So we're assuming your bear spray is accessible. Yeah. And we yell, bear, bear, bear. And they turn around and try to get their bear spray out, unlocked and deployed in time. And it's hard. I'm familiar with my bear spray, and I struggle with it.
I've done the bear spray training. I've never had to use it live in the field. But I've done the bear spray training where it's a thought process. Oh, there might be a bear coming. It's a whole new ball of wax when there's a bear charging at you, even if it's a fake bear. It's just the adrenaline rush. It makes you realize how easy it is for people to lock up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Learn the quick draw.
It is quick draw. That's exactly what it is. And it's good to practice. It really is. I think it's eye-opening for people. And maybe they go home and they put their bear spray on their hip and they practice a few more times than they would have. So,
are you going to bring the 3D archery range out?
I wish. That will not be there.
That would be fun.
No, that won't be there. But we'll have all kinds of other stuff there. So we've got a cider press where folks can pick up apples from their property, bring it, make some apple cider. The reason for that is removing attractants from your property.
Yes, that's a good idea.
We'll have a booth and a little workshop on putting up electric fencing. We actually also have like a carcass pickup program in Boundary County where if landowners have an animal that dies, we've got a trailer, we'll come and haul it off for them. So we'll talk about some of the support resources that we provide to try to help people avoid some of those bear conflicts that they don't want to have.
Okay, before we leave that, one more time, date and time and location.
September 26th, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Boundary County Fairgrounds.
All right.
Hope to see you there.
North Idaho Bear Fair. I think, although we talked about fishing, we didn't completely go through all the updates, and I know we wanted to talk about the new spearfishing.
Yeah, so spearfishing on Lake Pendere, fairly new, and it is a riot, and it has been very, very successful. I had the opportunity to go out with a Sandpoint local that is a spearfishing guru. And he kind of showed me the ropes, and I went out and took some video and put a GoPro on him while he was down diving, and it's hunting for fish.
So there's underwater diving spearfishing.
Underwater diving for spearfishing,
yes.
And people think it's, you know, easy, you just go down and spear a fish. It's hunting.
Yeah.
And you're doing it underwater where you've got like maybe a minute of breath, and you're hunting fish, and so it's a great opportunity for folks. It aligns very much with how we're managing Lake Pendere, which is trying to suppress lake trout, walleye, and pike. Not because we don't like those species. We do like those species, but they compete with the big rainbows and
the non-native predatory
fish that aren't compatible with the rest of the fish in there. And so these spear fishermen are able to spear those fish species, the three that I mentioned, which is really helpful for our management. Yeah. Targets.
I never thought about it, but it makes sense that, you know, that would be an item of interest and an act of opportunity on Lake Pendere. It's such a large body of water and such a variety of fish and such an interesting underworld ecology.
It is. I'm telling you, some of the videos that I've seen of them spearfishing, it's interesting because they dive down and these fish are curious.
Yes.
And they swim
to
close
them.
To them to figure out what they are. And that is what leads to their demise.
Yeah, that
curiosity
that
killed
part's
the cat.
A shame. But
they'll learn.
It reminds. Eventually they will. But, it reminds me. It's and maybe it's just in my head. The association growing up, people would use long-handled gigs for bullfrogs.
Oh yeah, gigging for bullfrogs. That's still a thing.
That's still a thing, and that's probably a thing here, even though they're an invasive species too.
Oh yeah, they are, and we encourage that. There's gigging for frogs, and then. People also fish for them, believe it or not. We've got a video out on
fishing
that.
Fishing for frogs.
You can cast a topwater bait near them and run it by them, and they'll bite onto it, and you can reel them in and cook them up.
Well, you know, the frogs are awfully tasty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those frog legs are good.
If you're going to eat frog legs, don't do the little tiny ones.
Yeah.
The bullfrogs.
Get the bullfrogs,
the
yep.
That, you know, a few dozen of those, and you're set for dinner.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, TJ, there's so many things we could talk about. We're coming close to the end of the interview. Are there any other things on your mind you'd like to bring up today?
I think that pretty much covers it. I think I always end like this, but I'll say it again, that for folks that are listening, just a reminder that we are here to serve the people of Idaho. And I know people may have mixed feelings on that, and people have different thoughts about fishing game and how we're doing and what we're up to, but it's what led me to get into this position and work for fishing game, is I am passionate about hunting, fishing, and trapping. I do it all myself. Mm-hmm. So do the rest of the staff in the office, and we do it because we love it, and we do it because we want to see it continue into the future, and we want people to enjoy that pride that we have as Idahoans about hunting and fishing and trapping. And so that's why we do the work that we do.
And the North American model of wildlife, hunting, trapping, conservation is all integrated.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's hunters, trappers, fishermen, we are conservationists. Like, yeah. We have all the reason in the world to see these animals right. live in perpetuity. And so we're throwing money at that constantly, right.
yes.
and we care about it.
Supporting conservation.
Absolutely.
Monetarily, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Well, TJ, thank you for coming on the show this morning. If you're just tuning in, this is The Morning Show live from the Bonner County Fairground with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Brzezinski. We've been talking in the last half hour or so with TJ Ross from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. If you missed any of that interview or our previous interview with Pam Duquette about the Monarch Festival, you'll be able to tune in this afternoon at 2 o'clock for the rebroadcast, and then it'll be available as a podcast at krfy.org. TJ, thanks for coming on the air.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Always enjoy it.
Great to see you.
Thank you,
Likewise.
TJ. Well, Julie, we have just a few minutes before we close out. We could go over some upcoming events if you've got some things there in front of you it looks like to talk about, or you want to talk about the fairground schedule.
I think maybe we should talk about what's going on as another plane flies over.
Yeah,
it's a lot of action out here, folks.
And wait until later on when everything heats up and there's throngs of people.
Oh, man, it's a happening. So it's a market sheep and swine quality contest. This morning still at 9 o'clock. Food court opens at 10. Market goat at 11. And, of course, the tractors and the other rigs are up front. But the 2 o'clock is the fair royalty crowning ceremony. So all the fair royalty be crowned there at 2 o'clock. And then 6 o'clock is the stock dog fun day out at the arena. I think that'll be really fun.
Yeah. Now, tell us about the KRFY schedule. We'll be out here for the morning show each day this week.
Each day this week, we'll be here for the morning show, and then we'll be on at noon and
okay.
be talking about some of the results of the different judging and things that are going on specifically at the fair with the fair report and interviews and talking to the people in the area. And then at 5 o'clock, we'll be here again spinning tunes.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, the 5 o'clock hour will be here just playing music for the folks. We'll have some speakers out here and show them a good time.
And that's going to be every day?
Every day.
Friday, Saturday?
Through Friday. And Saturday we'll be here from, I believe it's 1 to 4. We'll be here in the afternoon.
Well, that'll be a lot of fun.
I think so.
Yeah. And tonight is the Little Live Radio Hour.
It is. It's in town at the Hive Little Live Radio Hour. And I know it's Hannah Meehan, and I believe she has someone with her.
Yeah, Ezra, her husband.
Oh, yes. Okay,
yes.
Very good. Yeah. That'll be a good show. She's such a great performer.
Fresh off the festival.
That's right. 7 o'clock. It'll be live on the radio, or even better, come down to the Hive, and it's a free concert, and we have a lot of fun at those concerts.
It should be a lot of fun. Always enjoy the Little Live Radio Hour. Enjoy the fair. I'll be back next Tuesday on what is next Tuesday?
Let's
That'll
see,
be
the 25th. Yes.
Right. And I have Heidi Bohall from the YMCA. We're going to be talking about their programs for the balance of the summer and the fall. And then you'll be on the
yes.
week after that with
Garden Life.
Garden Life.
That's right. End of summer talk.
End of summer talk. Do you have a guest schedule?
Not yet, but I'm hoping to get the Kyle out of the SOAC.
Yeah, lots and lots to talk about end of summer. Well, we're going to go out here with a little bit of Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
That's the one.
One of the anthems that always reminds me of summer.
Me too.
Fire Lake. You can't go wrong with a little bit of Bob Seger.
Uh-uh. That's a Midwestern thing, I think.
All right. You know, this has been The Morning Show. Thank you for tuning in. And now, Bob Seger.
That home three-wheel. Who's gonna make that home? Say.